Good morning. This is Scott Wheeler, the host of the Vermont Voice, a program of 1490 AM WIK in Derby. The Vermont Voice is brought to you today by the generous sponsorship of the Orleans Essex Visiting Nurses Association and Hospice, providing more than 40 years of quality and compassionate home care in the Northeast Kingdom. The word cancer is a word that scares people more than almost any other word. It wasn't too many years ago that cancer was a virtual death sentence. That's no longer always the case. An increasing number of people are beating the disease, while other people are able to live with it as a chronic disease. Today's guest is Colleen Cole of Lowell, a woman who is battling cancer. She is here today to talk about her battle with the disease and the importance of cancer screening. Welcome to the show, Colleen.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I see today you are sporting a haircut very similar to mine.
Unfortunately, yes, but...
Did you shave your head or did you let it fall out?
Before I had my first treatment, I voluntarily shaved it down to like an inch. And then it gradually started coming out a week after my first treatment.
Was that hard? Because I would think for a woman that that would be a really hard thing.
My hair was rather short before I shaved it anyway. It was somewhat difficult because it was just all getting used to, but I had a lot of friends tell me that I rocked the bald head really well, so it kind of gave me the encouragement to stay confident in it, so it made it a lot easier.
I've never had anybody tell me I rock the bald head. But, all right, what brings you here today? I see you on the front cover of the Newport Daily, too.
Yep.
What is your message you'd like to get out there to listeners?
I just want listeners to understand the importance of early screening and detection. I was told by Dr. Lockridge, who is my doctor, who is my oncologist, that because of self-checking, I saved my life. I do have invasive ductal carcinoma stage 2. Luckily for me, it did not spread to lymph nodes or any other organs. I found it by doing a self-check. And a lot of women are uneducated and they don't know how to do a self-check, or they're scared to do it or awkward with it. And I just feel like women really need to understand the importance of it, because if you do it and there's something there, you might just be able to save your life.
Now you have breast cancer?
Yes.
Right. Now, back about a year so ago, I interviewed Devaney, who yeah. used to be a radio personality here, and in her family, women get breast cancer relatively young, including her mother who passed away. And what I did with her was, when she went for her first mammogram, she invited me with her.
Right.
I didn't actually go into the exam with her, but I actually went right to the door, and because she had the same message as you.
Right.
Is, you know, I guess there's a lot of a bit of myth or something behind mammograms that they hurt actually a lot more than they really do. And
right.
so that was Devaney's thing, is she went for her mammogram and she found out, well, you know, it wasn't the greatest thing in the world, but it certainly wasn't anything horrible
right.
worth dying for.
I had to have my first mammogram after I was diagnosed, because I went to Fletcher Allen after I had my biopsy done. And, of course, part of the process of doing further testing was the mammogram. And I didn't find it as bad as people said it was going to be.
So, and you're 34?
Yes, I turned 34 October 3rd.
Right. And you're actually young to be getting breast cancer then.
Yeah, and I have no history in my family whatsoever. It was kind of a shock.
Right. And so when did you start doing exams?
I've done exams ever since I was 15 years old. I was raised with an alcoholic mother who was very sick, and she was diagnosed when I was 16 with colon cancer, and it was stage 4, and it had spread to her liver and her lungs. So
right.
I've been kind of body conscious ever since.
So you actually have cancer in your family?
Yes.
Was it quite rampant?
My mom was given a 6-month diagnosis. She lived 2 years.
Right. And, you know, I recall your father quite well, Walt Spaulding.
Oh, yes.
And I think I've even written about him. Because,
you did.
Because your father was quite the character in the fishing world.
Oh, my dad. Yes, he was. The crazy old Walt Spaulding, first on the lice every year.
Yeah, I remember he told me he'd go out on this paper-thin ice, and he'd take his 4x8 piece of plywood to hold his weight up. And sometimes the police would come along and basically say to him, "You damn fool, get off the ice,
yep.
and he'd say, come out and get me.
Absolutely, that's my dad.
Yeah, and yeah, he passed away, what, two, 3 years
he
ago?
He passed away February 24th, 2009.
Yeah, so it's been that long.
Yep.
So how are you coping with this disease?
Remarkably well, to be honest with you. I'm one of those anxious people, and I get very nervous about certain things, especially health-related issues. But I find that with this diagnosis, I've been more aware of blessings in my life and more people that are supportive that I never thought would possibly be. And I try to take something positive out of it, whether it be just teaching somebody about self-checking or inspiring them to do things like scheduling a mammogram or anything. And I'm just kind of keeping the positive part.
You know, to tell you the truth is, in all my years of writing, I think what you're doing right now, I've seen other people do it, and they have saved lives. You know, you sitting here telling your story, you will save somebody's life. There's no doubt about it.
Then that's what I'm glad I can do for the community or for anybody.
Right, because I've seen other people, and they've come forward, and, you know, you can read an ad. That doesn't really get you, but when somebody tells that story,
right.
and somebody who you know in the community, because, you know, cancer always happens to somebody else.
It doesn't discriminate, absolutely.
Right, and so what do you think about... what do you think about your doctor, Dr. Lockridge?
Dr. Lockridge is very personable. He's very for the patient. And he, you know, he told me right away that self-checking saved my life. He and three doctors at Fletcher Allen told me that doing the chemotherapy, which is not the normal way to start a cancer procedure. After you're diagnosed, you normally get a lumpectomy, and then they do surgery depending on the case or the diagnosis. But him and the doctors agreed that, you know, my case would, you know, respond well to chemotherapy first. And it doesn't help that he looks like Nicolas Cage either, so.
Okay, we have a special guest joining us today.
Oh.
Yeah, hi, Scott.
Hey, Dr. Lockridge.
Hi.
Hi, Colleen.
Hi, how are you?
Not bad.
Or should we call him Nicolas Cage?
That's a new one on me. I'll have to pass that on to my mother.
He told me that, too.
Wait just a minute now. I got to ask. Right, now we've done this. Do you mind him joining?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
No?
I just wanted to make...
No, I'm happy.
But this was an impromptu thing because he had a patient cancel.
No, absolutely.
And I asked him. Okay. All right. Dr. Lockridge, what do you think about those words she has said about you?
I'm glad she thinks I'm personable, and most definitely we're in it for the patients here at my clinic, myself and Danielle and Lori and the other people that work here with us are big patient advocates, and we like to do things for people like Colleen. It really makes us feel good at the end of the day to see that we've been able to lend a helping hand in any way. And it doesn't always have to be something as technical as ordering a chemotherapy regimen or mapping out a complex treatment plan like Colleen's. Mm-hmm. It can be something small. You know, it can be referring someone to a friend who can maybe talk to them about what to expect or can support them in the rough emotional times.
Yeah.
And you know, it's good to hear that people recognize that in us.
Yes, definitely.
For those of you just tuning in, today's guests are Colleen Cole and Dr. Leslie Lockridge. Before you came on, I made the statement that, you know, at one time cancer was truly a death sentence. If you were told you had cancer, you were pretty much a goner. But then I went on to say, well, that's no longer the case. And if you can't beat the cancer, there's different kinds of cancer that you can actually live with as a chronic disease. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. We are changing the natural history of the disease. And it does indeed become more something that you can live with rather than die from. It's never a good thing. You know, nobody wants to have cancer. It's not something that is going to bode well for somebody's health situation in general. But we've gotten so much better at treatment since even when I finished training that people with cancer can go on to live their lives normally and often with a normal lifespan. And someone like Colleen, we're fully intending to completely eradicate the cancer and give her a chance to put it in the rearview mirror. You know, those cases are more and more frequent. And it's very satisfying to be an oncologist now, especially when you're an old man like myself who saw the way that it was before.
Yeah, old man. Hey, Colleen, on the lighter note, you know, Colleen was saying that some people say she really rocks the bald look.
I definitely agree with that.
And I was telling her, I said, you know, I said, nobody's ever accused me of rocking the bald look. Has anybody ever, you know, you got a bald thing going on there, too.
I think people are hopefully going to accuse both of us of rocking the bald look before too long, because whether we're rocking it or not, it's coming.
Right.
And I think what Dr. Lockridge said about, you know, how things have changed over the course of history and stuff, I think just having those facts read to you or told to you, it makes your outlook on the thing a lot more positive than it would be, you know, years ago. Makes you stay more positive, and you have that hope that, hey, you know, things have changed, things are working at a better rate. Doesn't make you as scared.
Now, with your mother, because it was stage four,
right,
she really didn't have a chance.
No, she did go through three different types of chemotherapy treatments. The first two didn't affect her at all. The third one, you know, she got the same side effects that I get when I get mine. But, no, they just ended it quickly after that because it wasn't doing nothing. So.
Now, I've interviewed people in the past who, like 15 or 20 years ago, I had a friend who had cancer. He was in his 60s, and I asked him, I said, what does chemotherapy feel like? And he said, have you ever walked out in front of a speeding bus? And he said that it was horrible. Mm-hmm. But I understand that chemotherapy now is much milder. I guess either one of you can answer that. Well, how's yours?
Personally, when I have my chemotherapy treatments, I'm fine. It's not the chemo itself that makes me feel sick. I believe it's the white blood cell booster shot I get the day after chemo that really does numbers on me. It's like getting a flu shot every 3 weeks.
Now, Dr. Lockridge, when you began, you probably heard stories like that, though, about how sick people got from chemotherapy.
Oh, I lived it. I was part of that history. Things didn't really turn around until really just about the year 2000. And there were a couple of things that happened at once that made things a lot better to be a patient and to practice oncology and hematology in general. First of all, our supportive care got to be a lot better. The white cell booster that Colleen's referring to is kind of nasty, and it does make you feel bad for a day after you get it. But what was happening in the past was the chemotherapy would drive people's white cell counts down so low that they were getting infections, and usually a hospitalizable type infection that could be life-threatening because of the depressed immune system. And under the best of circumstances, they would spend a week sick or more and maybe have to delay their next chemotherapy treatment or have to forego chemotherapy entirely, sacrificing some of the benefit from the treatment. So that's definitely an improvement over the way that things were at one time. We would just give people chemotherapy and wait for them to show up in the emergency room with a fever, wait for them to show up dehydrated because they couldn't eat and were vomiting up all the fluids that they could take. And those days are, for the most part, past us. Once in a while, something still happens, but it's very rare. It's been years since I've had to admit somebody for dehydration, for instance, for something like that.
Yeah.
So supportive care got a lot better. And our philosophy for treating cancer and malignant diseases and malignant hematologic conditions like leukemia, our philosophy changed right around the year 2000. And we stopped using the broad spectrum poisons so much and started thinking more about what the unique characteristics of a cancer cell are versus a normal cell. And we started targeting those unique characteristics so that we didn't also damage people's normal tissues and their healthy body. And that has made quite a lot of difference because we can keep patients on those types of therapies for long periods of time, for extended periods of time, and control the cancer that way. And because we're not hurting their healthy cells, their healthy tissues, they feel well and are able to live their normal lives.
Okay. All right. You mentioned that people have been really supportive of you. You have children. You have young children,
yes,
don't you?
Yes, I do. I have a 12-year-old, an 8-year-old, and I have a 21-month-old, and I also have two stepdaughters.
Right. And how especially the older one, you know, your 21-month-old, you know, probably doesn't have a clue what's going on.
No.
But how do your other ones, how do they cope with it?
My oldest, I believe, took it the hardest. She's my mother hen, and she's the, you know, worrier. And my youngest daughter, she's so into reading and her schooling and everything that she kind of uses that as an outlet. I mean, I'm sure she's affected, and she, you know, handles it well, like doesn't, you know, express it as much. But my oldest was the hardest.
And what about your husband, Corey?
Corey, very, very supportive. He, you know, I don't know honestly what I would do without him right now. He is just very caring and supportive and loving. He leaves work every treatment that I have and stays home with me that whole day. And you know, it's hard for him because his daughter's mother's not, you know, not feeling well either.
Right.
So it's a double getting both of his children's mothers not feeling the best. So.
Right. Now, you're sitting here wearing a shirt that says, support the fighters, admire the survivors, honor the
taken. Yeah.
What does that shirt mean?
It's a breast cancer awareness shirt that I purchased. Now that I've been diagnosed, I've been more apt to, you know, see stuff that's breast cancer awareness related and purchase it.
Right.
So.
Now, Dr. Lockridge, how important is it for these patients to have family and friends in their lives?
Indispensable. Indispensable. This is something that almost nobody could go through alone.
Right.
If there's one time that even independent Vermonters need a helping hand, it's when they're going through something like this. It can take a huge toll emotionally as well as physically, and we always consider a patient support system before we even make a treatment plan.
Right. So, but both of your parents are gone.
Yeah.
But have you had friends come forward as well?
Yeah, definitely had a lot of friends come forward. The friendships that I have at work and outside of, you know, home and stuff have been, I mean, people that I hardly even know have responded and thought and considered me. Like the Mary Hollow Foundation has been wonderful. The Lamoille County Cancer Network has been wonderful.
What about... you must have people just come out of the woodwork who've had, you know, who've had cancer and offer their at least words.
Locally, I haven't had very much response, to be honest. It's more from outside of Vermont, actually. I have people that have responded because of, you know, my things on Facebook that have gotten across, and they email me or they talk to me about their situation or their current situation, because I've got a couple of Facebook friends that are from Tennessee that have been through it and are currently going through it, and we keep in touch on a daily basis. So,
now, how many daughters do you have?
I have two biological two-step.
So with you, particularly your daughters then, you even though breast cancer does mm-hmm. affect men
yes.
in a not as high a rate, but mm-hmm. But for your daughters, will they have to probably be wary?
Absolutely, because my cancer is HER2 positive, which means it's estrogen driven. It's all hormonal. And sometimes a gene mutation is responsible for it. So, you know, I'm definitely going to have them genetically tested.
So, Dr. Lockridge, if somebody wants to be supportive of somebody in their life with cancer, what can they do?
Well, I guess the first thing to do is initiate the conversation. Mm-hmm. I think at one time anyway in this country we felt like cancer was a dirty word and that it wasn't to be spoken about in polite company. But we're past that, and we need to be past that because of the prevalence. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're aware, but it's now surpassed cardiovascular disease as the number one killer of Americans health condition wise. And cancer is now such a common thing. It's rare to find somebody who hasn't been touched by it in some way. So we're past the days of the pariah of cancer conversation. So it's important, I think, first to initiate the conversation with somebody. How are you doing? What is your treatment plan? How is it going? And then that bridges nicely into what can I do for someone? There's a lot of different ways to help. Let someone know that you're there for them, and you'll probably find something that you can do, that you want to do, or that you're already doing.
Right. And what have you had people do for you, Colleen, that really sticks out in your mind? Is, you know, it doesn't have to be a big thing, but just, you know, something that really meant a lot or means a lot.
I did have one friend. This is just, you know, one that sticks out in my mind a lot. She knew that my birthday was going to be a treatment week, and I hardly know this person. I mean, I'm friends with her, but I've just been associated with her because we live in close proximity. And I got home, and she went about finding a photo of my three kids and myself that I had on Facebook and made a huge, huge blanket. Mm-hmm. She had it printed. And she gave that to me as a birthday gift. And just the thought and the unexpected, you know, work that she put into it, you know, the personalization of it, and knowing because she went through it with her husband. Her husband had cancer, and his was really bad at one time. But he's a survivor. And she understands just having that feeling of having someone thinking of you at such a hard time in your life. It just overwhelmed me. And she's like, you can take this with you to chemotherapy, you know, and because it's cold in there sometimes. And it was just, I don't know, just the association of it being my kids and I and just not knowing me very much and going about above and beyond to do that for my birthday. It just meant the world to me.
Right. For those of you just tuning in, today's guests are Colleen Cole and Dr. Leslie Lockridge. Dr. Lockridge, you know, give me about a minute. What more would you like to say, either, you know, about cancer or about Colleen?
Well, Colleen's the greatest. You know, she's got such a fantastic attitude, and she's been so tough through all this. She's really a pleasure to treat, and we see a lot of that in our patient population here. And I think everybody that has had Colleen come through their path has felt the same way. And so, you know, what else can you ask for from a patient? And then I guess in general, I think she's a really good example and hopefully an inspiration for people to proactively take roles in their healthcare and to check themselves, get themselves checked out, you know, present for your screening, talk to your doctor about the different types of screening, talk to the people in your family about your family histories of cancer and try to educate yourselves on what to be aware of, what to be watching for. Cancer, as you said, is not a death sentence anymore. There's so much we can do to help people. There's so much more life out there for people are able to seek help at the right time, that it really is just a shame to see cancer go undiagnosed for too long.
Yeah, okay, absolutely.
And we want to help people. We want to make your lives better. We're not here to make a miserable situation more miserable.
Right.
And it really is available for people now. So go out and try to be proactive in this kind of matter.
Okay. Absolutely. All right. Colleen, final words.
Absolutely. Stay proactive. Don't be afraid to self-check. Don't be afraid to schedule that mammogram. Because if you wait too long, it could be too late. And I believe that if you just, even if something happens and you do unfortunately get diagnosed, don't, dwell in negativity. Find something positive in your life and surround yourself with your family and friends that love you. And stay as positive as possible.
Right. I think it's great what you're doing, because as I said, I've interviewed a number of people who are like you. They were going through a terrible chapter of their lives, but they really wanted to help other people. And there's no doubt in my mind that between Devaney doing her thing with the mammogram and you being very public about your illness, you will save somebody's life. There's no doubt about it. So I want to commend you.
Thank you.
And I want to thank both you and Dr. Lockridge for taking the time out of your day to try to save a few lives.
Absolutely. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Our guests today were Colleen Cole and Dr. Leslie Lockridge.
The Vermont Voice was brought to you today by the generous sponsorship of the Orleans Essex Visiting Nurses Association and Hospice, providing more than 40 years of quality and compassionate home care in the Northeast Kingdom. Life isn't always easy in Vermont's Northeast Kingdom. The weather is less than ideal, and the economy often lags behind the rest of the state. Despite this, most of the people of the kingdom have adapted well over the generations, mostly through that totally unique Vermont-style wit, a dry humor that catches one totally off guard, a humor that often tells a far deeper story. Hello, I'm Scott Wheeler of Derby. I'm the publisher of Vermont's Northland Journal, and I'm proud of the land of my birth, the Northeast Kingdom. For me, it isn't the beauty of the region that makes it such a special place to call home. It is the strength and perseverance of the people who live here, some who still fight to make a living off the land. The Journal is a monthly publication designed to serve as a forum for people to share their memories of the kingdom from an earlier time. Pick up a copy of the Journal in a store near you or call me, Scott Wheeler, at 802-334-5920 to learn more about this publication, or order a subscription online at www.northlandjournal.com.
Making sure the air in your dream home is healthy for your family to breathe. Make sure you build your home radon resistant. Preserve your family's health and well-being. To learn more, go to epa.gov/radon. Build radon resistant. That's keeping it green.
Green, green, green. Building your home, making it green. Radon resistant, make it healthy and clean. Make it green, green.
Building a radon-resistant home is easy. Just ask your builder or go to epa.gov/radon.
A message from the US EPA.